Sure. We've been citizen soldiers for in excess of 200 years. My great-great, whatever times grandfather signed the Declaration of Independence, George Reed from Delaware, and we've just always served. It's my great-grandfather. We're citizen soldiers. We don't normally make a career out of it. This happened, but we just serve. We're patriots, for lack of a better word, and that's a good word.
I was going to say, it's not a bad word.
Nope.
As much of a reputation as it gets.
Well, I don't put up with that.
To all who shall see these presents, greetings. I'm Adam Best. This is Veterans in the Wild. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another show of Veterans in the Wild. We appreciate you being here. We have a very unique guest. I'm proud to have a United States Marine Corps veteran, but also the first guest we have that is a veteran of the Vietnam War and the entire Vietnam era. Not to call him old immediately, but if you're watching the video, you already know that's the truth. Charles Reed. I'm gonna have a quick bio here. Charles Reed is a certified public accountant, a U.S. tax court practitioner, member of the IRS Advisory Council. Well, that sounds thankless. And the founder of Get Payroll. In addition to his executive career, Charles is a decorated United States Marine Corps sergeant, a combat veteran of the Vietnam War. Charles is an accomplished senior executive and an entrepreneur with more than 50 years of financial leadership experience in a broad range of industries and author of 4 books. His latest book is The Payroll Book, a guide for small business and startups, and is currently number 25 in the small business book section on Amazon. Welcome, Charles.
Pleasure to be here, Adam. Thanks for having me.
So we normally start with the military part of the show. You enlisted in the Marine Corps in the Vietnam era. I'll let you take it from there.
Well, I'd gotten out of high school, didn't know what to do, working, got tired of that, decided I'd join the Marine Corps, young and dumb. So at 17, I joined the Marine Corps. My dad was Navy. I have two sisters that served as well, one in the Marine Corps, one in the Army. They were officers. I was enlisted. I did the work.
Thanksgiving must be a lot of fun.
Well, I got into it. One Thanksgiving, actually, I'm on the floor in the kitchen, spit shining my shoes. And I don't know about you, but when I spit shine shoes, I spit on them. Mm-hmm. And my sister, who was an officer in the Marine Corps, just thought that was disgusting. I tried to explain to her that's how we did it, and she just couldn't believe it. And my drill instructor wasn't around to send her to. So, it was an interesting afternoon. But,
Well, there's a reason they call it spit shining your shoes.
No shit.
I was an officer, but I'm with you on that one. So you went to boot camp in San Diego.
Boot camp at MCRD, spring of 67. Went to ITR at Pendleton. Was stationed back at Pendleton, and I was a computer programmer. Well, I was a computer operator. Then I was trained as a computer programmer and systems engineer. They sent me to IBM for that training. I went to Okinawa, spent 16 months in Okinawa. Then I got myself transferred to Vietnam. I couldn't be in the middle of a war and not go. So I got transferred to Nam. And then when I got to the computer center at Red Beach, I got transferred to the local rifle platoon that did interdictions and ambushes around Red Beach. So that's what I did for 6 months before my tour was up, and I came back and was stationed in Kansas City.
And obviously I wasn't even allowed during the Vietnam era. My thought was that it was, you had to go over there for a year. Was that just special orders you had, or is that because you're already
standard tour was 13 months, but I'd already been over there 16 months overseas in Okinawa. Another 6 months in Vietnam put me at 22 months, which was the equivalent of almost the equivalent of 2 tours.
Okay. Yeah. I was taking Americans from, taking the military from the U.S. Right. Going over, come back. That's a year.
Normal rotation was 12 to 13 months. Yep. But I'd already spent more than that and then extended overseas. Frankly, Okinawa was great duty. I remember when I was back in Kansas City, Major Collins, who was getting ready to go to the service center in Okinawa, was at a party, and somebody said, "Are you going to take your wife?" And he looked around, made sure his wife wasn't close, and said, "Taking your wife to Okinawa is like taking a ham sandwich to a banquet." So I enjoyed duty over there.
For the listeners, before we started the show, Charles gave me some other advice, and it was advice on actually being in war that he got from his father, but it actually kind of applies right here. Can you tell us what your dad told you before you joined the military?
Well, before I joined the Marine Corps, we'd gone to dinner up in Chicago. Nice dinner, massage at the athletic center, and so on and so forth. But he said to me, because he was a Navy veteran, World War II, he said, about military service and about combat, if you've been there, then no explanation is necessary. People who've been there will understand you. If they haven't, then no explanation is possible. And so that's true of the military service, combat, Okinawa, and a number of other things. But it's a truism that I've used multiple times in my life since. It's a very true thing. If you've been in combat, as a number of us have been, we understand each other. If you haven't been, you can't really explain it to somebody.
Absolutely.
As I was telling you, Adam, the first time that bullet went past my left ear, not my right one, my left, I heard it. And as I said, you know, as long as you hear it, it's okay. It's, you know, the ones you don't hear are the hurt. I had to ask myself what I was doing there, because it wasn't the movies, I promise you.
Something else, ironically, that you said was one of the most peaceful moments of your entire life was actually in Vietnam, in the middle of a war zone. Could you talk a little bit more about what that
day or night? I don't know. It was late summer, early fall, probably September before the rain started. We were doing a night patrol ambush out on some islands out in the rice paddies, where we expected Viet Cong were setting up booby traps and so on. We'd lost people out there recently before that. Our platoon guide had gotten blown away by a what's now called an IUD. IED. So we didn't call them that then. But it was just at twilight. It was warm, not hot, just warm. We were walking across the dikes of the rice paddies out to the west. Sun had just dropped below, so it was dusk. And the mountains north of us, north of the Namo River, were stair-stepped up in purple, deep and then lighter as it went up. The daytime insects had pretty much quieted down, and the nighttime ones were not out. So we're out in this, and Vietnam is beautiful, a beautiful, verdant, green, full of life, beautiful country, tropical. We're walking out across the dike, single file, 10-yard separation, so you're not talking to anybody. You hear the creak of your equipment, the footsteps, and then this most beautiful, peaceful, bucolic scene. The Buddhist gong in the temple in the village behind us begins to ring, and the deep, sonorous sound just rolls across the rice paddies. And that just was one of the most peaceful moments in my life. Just, it was just perfect.
Everything.
Of course, we're on our way out to do an ambush and kill people, but you know, it was still, it was a very, very peaceful moment. It's one that I remember, and it's been well over 50 years. I remember it like it was yesterday.
And that's two things. Is one, I have to stop and tell my old man, he's going to be laughing at this when he listens to that. This is the perfect explanation of a Marine. Found complete serenity, and then we're moving on to go blow up a bunch of other people. That's the United States Marine Corps.
Yep.
But also going back to the, If you've been there, no explanation is needed. If you've never been there, no explanation is possible. I mean, you described so many details of that scene where you said, you know, the daytime bugs had gone in, the nighttime bugs had not come out. There's no way I know anything about that. I've never been to Vietnam. I've never, and you wouldn't, it's the same thing you just said is ringing true again. If you'd never actually been there, you wouldn't know, like, okay, the, there is daytime bugs. There are nighttime bugs. There's a moment where brings it kind of back full circle, like exactly what you just said. If you've never been there, you can't really explain it.
Right.
You said your father had been in, you said your brothers and sisters had been in, but it actually dates much further back for your family. Is that correct?
Sure. We've been citizen soldiers for in excess of 200 years. My great-great, whatever times grandfather signed the Declaration of Independence, George Reed from Delaware, and we've just always served. It's my grandfather, my father served, my grandfather served, my great-grandfather. We're citizen soldiers. We don't normally make a career out of it. This happened, but we just serve. We're patriots, for lack of a better word, and that's a good word.
I was going to say, it's not a bad word.
Nope.
As much of a word. Reputation as it gets.
Well, I don't put up with that. You know, I believe in our country, and I fought for it. Whether you believe the war was justified or not, I don't care. I served my country to the best of my ability and still do in various other capacities. Spent 3 years as a government advisor, unpaid. so, you know, it's the things you do as a patriot.
Was that the IRS Advisory Council?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a little bit what I mean, I'm glad to see that they have it sounds like citizens tell the IRS what's working, what's not, but could you tell us a little bit more?
Sure.
Where you do?
It's a federal advisory committee. And so what we do is we meet with the Internal Revenue Service. There's five meetings a year and lots of work in between. And we advise them. Ask,
it's actually human beings that work there? Yeah. Not just a bunch of devils?
Most of the people at the IRS are nice people.
Yes.
Now, you have to understand, they are civil servants. So there's no profit motive, and some of the urgency you see in business doesn't exist.
Yes.
But for the most part, they're good people. They're mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, brothers, sisters, husbands, wives. For the most part, they're good people, and you can work with them. As long as you don't start yelling at them and screaming at them, they can be responsive. You get irate and you start yelling at them, they'll just cut you off at the knees. They don't care.
The job's going to be either here tomorrow and you just have to come back.
So, you know, if you get one of those that's not really easy to work with, just hang up, call back. You get somebody else, I promise you. we worked on various problems and in situations. We were accountants, lawyers, enrolled agents, people with industry tax experience and knowledge. We were vetted by the FBI. We served 3 years, and we were involved in a lot of cutting edge stuff, things that they were proposing, things they were trying to change, and they wanted input from people who had to deal with it, like the new W-4 and a lot of other things that demand pay was one of the things that I worked on. Other things that the IRS is very insular. They don't get out. They're not in the public. They're not in business. They don't fill out their own forms for the most part. So we provide them a whole different point of view. It's a 3-year assignment. A third of it turns over every year. So there's always fresh people. And I had lunch with a new commissioner several times. Chuck's a nice guy. Met all the commissioners for the various business entities, as they call them within the IRS, the divisions. Met a lot of people, talked to a lot of people, got a lot of information, provided a lot of information and opinion. It was very interesting.
Yeah, I never even knew that existed. So
yeah,
very fun to learn. Jumping all over the timeline of your life back to Vietnam. you said you had a funny story. If we could dive, you visited a girlfriend at college in uniform.
Well, October 15th, 1969 was Moratorium Day against the war. Not too many of your listeners will know what that is, but it was a big nationwide demonstration against the Vietnam War. Well, I had landed back in Sacramento the day before coming back from Vietnam. And my girlfriend at the time, who I'd met in Okinawa, she was a dependent, was at the University of California, Davis.
Ooh.
So I put on my
spot to go to.
Yeah, I put on my dress greens and went up to see her. And I borrowed a friend's car and I drove up there in the parking lot and visitors a lot. And I'm going over the administration building so I can locate her. And class changes. Now, if you've ever been on a college campus when class changes, they just all rush out and rush back in. It's a madhouse. And I'm walking down the middle of the sidewalk. Sidewalks at the college, you know, 10 feet wide. Now, I'd heard stories of them spitting on uniforms and, you know, giving servicemen a hard time and so on. And I'm just out of Vietnam. I don't care at this point. My attitude is not civilized. I've been in combat for the last 6 months.
Yes.
I don't care. You know, what are you going to do to me? Send me back to Vietnam? I don't care. Okay. So I'm walking down the middle of the sidewalk and the class changes and all these kids come, they're my age, really. Well, many of them come rushing out. And as I walk down the sidewalk, they just cleared off the sidewalk. They just got off onto the grass. They wouldn't get within 5 feet of me, which was probably good. Because if any of them had spit on my uniform, I'd already decided what I was going to do. You know, I was going to tear the head off and shit down their neck. So I didn't care. And not one of them got anywhere near me. I don't know what the facial expression was, but it probably conveyed to them that I was going to do exactly what I was going to do.
That's funny how that worked out, because we started the story and I was like, I have no idea where this is going to go. Do we need to call the police or what happened here?
You need to call the coroner, but, you know, that's a different story.
Yeah, don't even bother with the police. So you said you had the most peaceful moment of your life in the middle of a war zone. You said it's a beautiful country, no animosity towards the people. But the distinction, I like the distinction you made, was that no animosity towards the country, the people, but it's for the dictatorial leaders.
Yeah, now you got
two veterans and you use dictatorial leaders.
Yeah. Ho Chi Minh and his ilk. And, yes. You know, I have no use for people that want to subjugate other people to their whims and desires. And that's what dictators do, whether it be Ho Chi Minh or Pol Pot or Stalin or Hitler or any number of other or whoever the current leader in China is, they're in power for themselves. And I find that to be unacceptable.
Yes. And you went on to say that ego is the downfall of people in government, people in business. Have you seen other examples? Has that grown through your ongoing career?
Oh, ego. And that's what makes dictators, is they think they're better or smarter or more powerful or whatever, has destroyed more businesses. And I've seen it over and over. It's just, and to go back to the Marine Corps, the Marine Corps teaches you mission, men, self. You accomplish the mission, whatever it takes. Then you take care of your men. Then you take care of yourself. And if more business leaders understood that, they'd do a lot better at business. When they put their ego first, nobody cares about working for them, first of all. Their clients don't care about them, and they have a tendency to go bankrupt. Now, some get very wealthy. I don't disagree. There's always the exceptions. But for the most part, they have a very tough time, and they end up out of business. I've seen it over and over and over again. It's ego gets in the way. It's a terrible thing when you let your ego rule what you're doing and ruin the things around you and disparage the people that work for you and disparage your clients and you think you're better than they are. I learned a long time ago, you don't need to be the smartest person in the room. You just need to learn how to hire the smartest person in the room, okay? And let them do what they're good at.
Yes.
You can't be everything. I don't fire artillery. I don't drive tanks. I don't fly airplanes in the military. I run computers and pound the ground. So, you got to have all those people. I mean, what would I do without a mess hall and cooks in the military? I'd starve to death. So you've got to understand that it's a group effort to accomplish the mission. You can't do it by yourself. And that goes back to my Marine Corps training. So it's been very useful for me.
I assume this tradition existed when you were in, but I know specifically of all the branches, the Marine Corps has something specific about the way in which they eat. Could you tell civilians or people who may not know how the Marine Corps would eat and why that's important?
Well, one of my favorite stories about eating in the Marine Corps is boot camp.
Okay.
First meal I had in boot camp, breakfast. I'd gotten in there late at night, and they ran us around until 3 a.m. and let us sleep for a couple of hours, then got us up in our sweats and tennis shoes, high tops, and marched us, if you can call it marching, herded us to the mess hall. We were basically the first ones in, being the new recruits. And you get this metal tray, and they throw slop on it. Some of it looks like slop. Chip beef on toast, better known as shit on a shingle.
Yep.
And so we get over there and, we have to stand there when we get to the table. And then he tells us to sit down. Well, of course, we don't sit down together, so we stand up. Sit down, stand up, sit down, stand up. You know, that goes on for a few minutes. Finally, the command comes to eat. And so I'm reviewing where I'm at and nibbling and having a little bit of coffee. And I've consumed maybe 10, 15% of my breakfast. And the order comes to stand up and it marches out and everything gets dumped into the trash can. Well, come noon, when the command came to eat, I vacuumed up that tray and then sat back with my coffee. And I never not completed another meal in boot camp. There was only one.
Yep.
To this day, I sit down at Rotary or wherever else. I'm normally the first one at the table done. When I sit down to eat, I eat. That's my job. So
we can talk later.
Yeah, exactly. Let me finish here. Then we'll talk all you want, but yep. I'm not gonna let this get cold. So that was eating in boot camp. And I've used to explain that story more than once to explain why I eat as rapidly as I do.
Yep.
Because it was ingrained in me very early on. So, another one, I was in Okinawa and the mess hall, we had mess hall. So, walk through metal tray, serve dinner. And the food was terrible. It had really gotten bad. And we were lucky. Our platoon commander, which was the data processing platoon, was the second ranking man in the regiment. Okay. He was I think he was a full colonel. He may have been a lieutenant colonel. And we'd complained to him. And so one day he went over and grabbed the regimental XO, who was a major, and they came to our mess hall. They have lunch. And the mess sergeant saw him and was just, gentlemen, let me get you something, yada, yada, yada. They said, no, we'll just get what's in the line. I never saw the mess sergeant again. he got transferred someplace else that afternoon. I don't know what happened, but the food was terrible. The food got much better after that, I promise you. So, and then mid-rats was always good. That was probably the best meal. It was midnight rations.
Yep.
And when you were allowed to do that, not everybody was. You had to have duty and so on. But it was always fresh eggs and cooked to order, and it wasn't the rushed, regimented meal. So mid-rats was always midnight rations was always good eating. So those are some stories about eating in the Marine Corps. And of course, we all served mess duty at one point or another.
Yes. So,
peeling potatoes and cleaning pans and whatever else.
Maybe more specifically where I was trying to go was you said the Marine Corps is good on teaching you the mission, the men, and yourself.
Right.
So when you said the colonel, you and the colonel went to the mess hall, you guys walk in together? Do you both eat together? There's something specifically only the Marine Corps does. I want to pause here for a moment because I have a great opportunity for you. If you're a podcast enthusiast like me, you probably thought about starting your own. I can tell you from firsthand experience that it's been an amazing journey for me, but it can definitely feel daunting and uncertain at times. Well, that's where Buzzsprout comes in. Buzzsprout is without a doubt the easiest way to start your own podcast. They made my journey much simpler with resources for my questions and getting listed on all the platforms like Apple, Spotify, Google, and more. You also get a custom website, detailed analytics, audio players that you can drop into other websites, and weekly tips to help your podcast grow and succeed. To start your own podcast and get a $20 Amazon gift card, follow the link in the show notes. That lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you and it helps support our show. Buzzsprout, the easiest way to start a podcast. Now back to our episode. There's something specifically only the Marine Corps does. Leaders eat last.
The leaders always eat last. I saw this at guerrilla warfare school. We finally got a first hot meal in about 4 days. And the lieutenant, first lieutenant, young guy, made sure all of us got through the line first. Then he ate. We didn't get seconds before him, but every one of us got fed before he got fed. That's always true in the Marine Corps. You're right. That's the officers never go first. That's just, it's the men first, then you. So you take care of your men, you see that they're taken care of, they get fed, they get showers and so on, then you worry about yourself. And the men really respect that because they know that you're putting their interest above your own. That makes us far more willing to do things for them than if they let their ego get in the way.
Yeah, definitely. You said one of the things you did as a computer programmer was, I don't know, I'm sort of probably projecting here, you helped rewrite the Joint Unified Military Payroll System in the 70s.
Yeah, when I got to Kansas City, the military was in the middle of rewriting the Joint Unified Military Pay System, JUMPS, which they've done several times since, I'm sure. So, yeah, I had a small portion of that doing systems work. There at the Marine Corps Automated Service Center on Bannister Road in Kansas City.
I guess, was the plan always to be an accountant? Did that maybe develop interest in accounting? How did you get the transition?
I really didn't know about accounting until I got to school. I was probably going to major in finance because I understood that. But as I started taking classes in finance and accounting, and they're very closely related, I found I enjoyed the accounting. I was good at it. I had a detailed analytical mind, so it was much easier for me than for the expressive type personalities or the salesman type personalities.
Yes.
Or my wife's personality. I sent her to an accounting class years later so she'd more understand what we were doing, and she came back after 2 days and quit.
It's a love, honor, and bad.
Yeah.
Didn't say anything about that, did it?
Yeah. And, you know, you you want to live a happy life. You don't make your wife do things she doesn't want to do. So she quit that and we didn't get our money back, but that was okay. It was community college.
Yep.
But so as I went into more courses in college, I enjoyed it and I took more and more and more, probably 53 hours of college accounting. In my master's, it was really, though it's an MBA, it was really a master's in taxation because I just found it fascinating. So I graduated very quickly. I started in June of 73, and in December 76, I had my master's degree. I was motivated.
Yes, you were.
That's another thing the Marine Corps teaches you is self-motivation, discipline. both external and internal. Yep. You've got to have it, and you develop it. And that served me very well since I got out just over 50 years. Well, let's see. I got out in 71, so it's just over 50 years. It was 50 years this last April I got out.
Awesome. And then, so could you tell us more of the story of how we get to who we see before us today?
Well,
Were you bald in 1971?
No, I still had some hair. But, you know, I never wore it long. Even in college, I never wore it long. But I was already married. But wearing too many hats when you're an entrepreneur takes care of your hair, I tell you.
That's what happened.
That's what happened. So, no, I really enjoyed accounting. So when I got my master's, I went to work for Texas Instruments as a financial analyst. Got my experience working for a CPA, so I got my certificate a year later. Worked for small and medium-sized and large businesses for about 15 years. Then I realized I was never going to run a major corporation. I didn't have the political skills. I was unwilling to stab people in the back and toss them off the ladder. And to get ahead in corporations, you got to be willing to do that. And I was unwilling to do so. I don't, that's not me. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to run a company, and I prefer being in charge rather than not being in charge, and I grew up in a family business, I figured I'd have to start my own. So in 91, 30 years ago, Ruth and I started our own business.
Awesome. And it's grown since? Where are you at now?
Well, it's grown substantially since. It was a mobile accounting and payroll service. I had bought a franchise. I'd been working for the franchisor as COO, and the board wanted to diversify from doing the work to just selling franchises. So I bought the original office. Shortly thereafter, the franchisor went belly up and left us in the wind. We changed the name on the business and moved forward. And I've been doing it ever since. I sold off the accounting portion here about 10 years ago to my partner at the time. He still offices here in the same building. And we've concentrated on payroll. We provide payroll services to small and medium-sized businesses around the country.
Fantastic. What was, you have four books that you authored.
Right.
Can you discuss each?
The first one was a loose leaf spiral bound on how to form a new business and accounting, tax, and financial considerations. It's obsolete now. I'd done one on employees. It was the start of a series that I never finished. The third one was a little black book of the spa business. My first marketing manager was an esthetician by training. Mm-hmm. And so she had an end to that industry. So we did up a book for the spa industry about the back office, hiring, firing, contracts, payroll, finances, so on. Not how to do facials or hair, but how to do the business side of it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have too much information on that one, on the facials or the hair.
Not on the hair, for sure. And then the fourth one, which is, let's see, the payroll book, yes, which just came out recently. It was published by Wiley. It's a guide for small businesses and startups. I call it 30 years of experience distilled down to 95,000 words.
But he was counting.
So it was there's nothing like it. The nearest thing to it is the Payroll Source from the American Payroll Association, and it's about $600. This is available on Amazon. I think they have it discounted to $22.93 at the moment from $29.95. So it was something that small businesses could afford. Mm-hmm. You know, to pay $600 for a reference book when you're just starting a business is a little tough.
And you don't realize how important it is.
But still, it's a little tough.
Yes.
So this one is you know, $23, and anybody can afford it. You know, it's a 4 Starbucks coffees, whatever. but it's 30 years of experience and still down. So most of the questions I've ever gotten asked about payroll are in there with answers and horror stories and funny things and things to be aware of and so on, because it's full of traps. The IRS is not your friend. And in fiscal 19, they issued $13 billion of employment tax penalties. Probably more than half, not probably, more than half got abated, eliminated, you know, dismissed by people like me who knew what they were doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you know, you're out there, you're a chef, you're a mechanic, you're a dog groomer, whatever. And the IRS sends you a letter. You don't know what to do. The analogy I use is when I grew up, Pele was the world's best soccer player, Brazilian.
Yes.
Wonderful athlete. But if you take him and put him in a New York Yankees uniform at second base, he'd be lost. He'd still be a great athlete, but he'd be totally lost. Well, you take a businessman who is good at his business and knows what he's doing. He's an entrepreneur. He's successful. And now you tell him, oh, you got to be a tax expert. He's lost.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Okay. So that's what we do. We're the payroll tax experts. We're the compliance experts. We know how to solve those problems. We know how to prevent them. And that's part of what's in the book is how to avoid those problems, how to solve them if you get them, and all the other things that go into payroll and associated with payroll.
Fantastic. So what else is filling your time nowadays?
Well, I play a lot of poker.
Okay.
I'm a good poker player. I played last night, came in eighth, didn't make the money. The money was seven. I went out on the bubble. But I make money, not a living, but I make money at playing poker. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of fun doing that. I read a lot. Now that Ruth's gone, I don't do as much things because, you know, it's lonely to do things by yourself.
Yep.
I've got some female friends I see, but they're not Ruth. You know, Ruth was the light of my life and the love of my life.
Yep.
The one who makes the desert, who made the desert flowers bear fruit. She was very, very important to me.
Yes.
And I miss her. So I get by. Poker keeps me busy. Reading keeps me busy. So I'm not sitting there staring at the walls.
Yes. Something I've found is that, as we talked before the show, is that I said I got out and I felt like I lost like any kind of sense of purpose. 10 years later now, I think next week launches episode 10 for my podcast. And what's been so great for me is our conversation, or like we hinted on before, was reconnecting with veterans. Do you do anything now with Marine Corps societies, with veteran societies?
I've spent the last 5 years on the board of directors for the Veterans Coalition of North Central Texas.
Okay.
I hire veterans. I did an interview with Maria in the morning on Fox Business about hiring veterans. Mm-hmm. I believe in that. Having been there, I understand that their experience, their knowledge, their discipline is extremely valuable to business. A lot of business people, as we've discussed, don't, and I do.
Yes.
So I'm very pleased to work with veterans and to hire them and to support them wherever I can.
Okay. And I had another question, but it was gone.
That's life. But, you know, when I got out of the military, I was married and still had kids. Ruth had five children when I married her. I claim insanity, but that's a whole different story.
Well, you're a Marine, so that's, isn't that redundant?
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I had the kids and Ruth to take care of, which gave me a purpose, but I was lost. The business didn't value my experience. I worked at a soap factory. I did other things. I worked at for a construction firm, leveling yards. I was young and in shape. But I couldn't use my technical experience because it wasn't business. I interviewed with employers. I interviewed with an insurance company here in Dallas when we moved down here shortly after getting out. And they were moving their business from 1401 to 360, two different old computer systems.
Yes.
That's exactly what I was working on with the Joint Unified Military Pay System, rewriting it from 1401 to 360.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I knew both systems intimately, and I knew both programming language intimately. to find that particular experience was very hard to find because it was very precise. And the recruiter said he didn't think that my military experience in the rewriting the payroll system applied to the fiscal needs that they had in an insurance system. That was probably the only time in my life I told a recruiter or somebody I was interviewing with that they were an idiot. Because he was. Within 10 years, the company went bankrupt.
But that was satisfying.
It was. And you know, I told friends when we talked about it, well, I know why they went bankrupt. And they said, why? Because they hired the wrong people.
Yep. One last question I always try to ask is, like I said, the reason I started this podcast was I lost sense of purpose and or, you know, veterans do learn a lot. What did they take from the military and what do they do with it throughout their life? I typically try to ask, you know, what advice would you have the Marine Corps sergeant that's thinking about getting out and he wants to go into accounting? But I think maybe we already answered it through the book. It's probably all in there.
The sum of it is there, but there's a couple of things. It's taking the Marine Corps drive and re-explaining it in terms of business. And I use this for my in a business discussion. There is no traffic jam on the extra mile. When you go that extra mile, your clients will appreciate it. And believe me, the competition's not doing it. They're not. You're by yourself. There's no traffic jam out there. Yep. So you can accomplish things and your clients will love you for it and that your competitors won't do what you do. So go the extra mile for your clients.
Okay.
And the other one that I've stolen from Bill Gates, we'll forget the rest of him, but this one I liked, particularly recently. Anyway, a person, will overestimate what they can do in a year. You didn't go from private to sergeant in a year, okay? Man will overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in a decade. So long term, it's not a sprint. Business is a marathon. You need to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to have reversals. Hell, you know, I got busted in the Marine Corps for, you know, giving a major a hard time. Well, you're not a true Marine until you've been busted at least once anyway. So, but it's long term. You just keep going. You know, you get up. It's not being knocked down. It's getting up that's important.
Yes.
So long term, you can accomplish immense things. I've been in business 30 years. Beat the odds on that many times over. Most businesses don't make 4, let alone 10, let alone 30. So it's the long term, guys. Stick with it. Keep fighting. Keep fighting. Keep fighting. Never give up. Never give up. Never, never, never give up.
Awesome. I think that's a great place to wrap up. I really enjoyed the show, Charles. What's the best way for our listeners to connect to you?
Well, GetPayroll is the website, getpayroll.com. They can reach me at CJR, Charles J. Reed, at getpayroll.com. That's my email. If they've got something pressing and they need an answer, 972-353-0000. And Adam, for your listeners, because you're a nice guy, any of your listeners can go to the website, thepayrollbook.com, and enter the discount code Veterans in the Wild, all one word.
Okay.
And get a free book. No shipping, no handling. We'll send them a free book. So that's for your listeners.
Awesome. Thank you, Charles. That's very gracious of you.
Well, if they're interested in payroll, I want them to have the book.
Yeah. It's 30 years of knowledge, so it might as well be spread far and wide.
The copies do no good sitting on the floor in the next office, believe me.
Yep. All right, well, thank you, Charles.
Adam, my pleasure.
Yep. Take care.